This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the Fine Dining Podcast. Caroline, do you like to dine finely?
I do, because it rhymes with my name.
Caroline, dine fine, drinking water, drinking wine.
With Diane Feinstein.
With Diane Feinstein. RIP. Fine Dining, the search for the most mediocre restaurant in America, is a podcast where comedian Michael Ornelas is traveling the country, eating at all the chain restaurants in search of the perfectly average 5 out of 10 dining experience. The objective middle threshold of where bad becomes good, which, if you listen to this podcast, you're very familiar with the concept.
With a 5 out of 10 experience.
And bad maybe becoming good, as God saves us. Recently, featured guests include Marissa Pinson and John Glover as they review Costco's Food Court. It's a two-part episode that covers everything from discontinued menu items to how many hot dogs could fit in their mouths. And today, his IHOP episode dropped. So right now, head over to linktree.com/finedining podcast and click Bee's Giveaway to enter for an all-expenses-paid trip to your local Applebee's, the current frontrunner for the most mediocre restaurant in America at a 5.02 out of 10 for you and three of your friends. And you can watch or listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Caroline, who would you take?
Oh my gosh.
Applebee's?
If I got a table for four at Applebee's.
Yeah.
Obviously, love of my life, Nathan, gonna be there.
My fingers are crossing.
Who likes chain restaurants?
I'm getting a nosebleed.
Probably my friend Jeremy. Okay.
I know him.
That leaves one more. Let me ask you a question,
yeah,
Kevin.
Yeah.
If you were gonna order an Applebee's right now, what would you get?
I'd get a fried onion if they had it.
All right, you're in.
Okay.
As long as we can share.
Hell yeah. Listen to Fine Dining on your platform of choice while you're there. Enter by May 1st, and the winner will be announced on the May 8th Chipotle episode. That's linktree.com/finedining podcast. We listened to Jeannie Robertson, the Christian humorist, and we're going to talk about it today on Good Christian Fun.
I want to see Captain!
Frasier really cuts through, doesn't
he? Yeah, he does.
Bop.
He's a good voice.
You got me straight tripping,
yeah,
boy.
Baby.
Welcome to Good Christian Fun. I'm Kevin.
I'm Caroline.
And we're here to have good Christian fun. That, of course, was Reba McEntire opening the country CMA Christmas
Awards
special last year with there was a long extended bit about Santa using social media and technology.
Mm-hmm.
But our favorite part is that in where she finally starts going to the song and she goes,
Oh, it's such a good moment.
Is Reba a Christian? She'd be a good candidate for she's actually a Christian.
I'm going to hazard absolutely she's a Christian.
Because in country music, it's the law.
I think so.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
But Casey
Unless
Musgrave,
you're Casey
surely
Musgraves.
Not, right?
Well, she's a preacher.
She prays to the God of LSD, not G-O-D. Good Christian Fun is a podcast where we talk about Christian pop culture, Christian music, movies, entertainment, speakers,
yeah,
comedians, humorous. We've talked about comedian Shonda Pierce on the show. We've talked about polarizing figures like Kirk Cameron on the show.
Mike Warnke.
We've talked about Mike Warnke on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Big boy in the Satanic Panic movement.
Yeah.
And this week we talk about Jeannie Robertson. But before we do that, a disclaimer, we're not here to make you go to church or proselytize to you or preach to you. We don't care about your soul, like at all. We just want you to be happy.
Up to you.
We want you to be happy and whole and healthy and whatever that is that doesn't hurt other people to get you there.
That's right.
That's fair, right?
Yeah. And I hope you get your rocks off while you're doing it.
Yeah, baby. Oh, Jeannie Robertson. How's your heart, by the way? We'll do a mini. How's your heart?
Oh, mini one. Great. I had a really nice Sunday morning. It's like a beautiful day. I feel like it's finally summery, springtime. There's butterflies floating through town.
And I will say, to paint a picture for the listener, you can check it on our Instagram. And this is not true of all podcasters.
Uh-huh.
I'm pointing to myself. what I appreciate about doing a podcast with Caroline is that for our podcast, Caroline is always camera ready.
Shut up.
That looks great. You look great. That's what I'm saying. It's a compliment.
Oh,
no,
thank you.
It's not a slam.
We do have to take a photo every time.
We do.
And so I do have to worry about it a little bit.
So should I worry about it a little bit more? Should I get up to your level? Like a
gloss.
I'll wear a gloss.
A little bit of liner.
I'd be happy to. Do you want to do my makeup sometime?
Absolutely. I would really like to do that.
Like 8 years ago in the Valley, I was friends with a makeup artist, and she did my face, and it was a full tiger face.
Whoa.
And those pictures do exist on the internet, and for the eventual doxing of me, I encourage people to pass those around.
Yeah, or your eventual TBT. You like to dox yourself plenty.
So yeah, you know what? That isn't a TBT, just a self-doxing.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'll do that. Okay, great. But we need to talk about Jeannie Robertson.
Yeah.
And we need to do it with a very special friend and a very special guest. Who could it be? Well, maybe one of the best people in podcasting. Ladies and gentlemen, you may know him from his podcast, Pop Rocket, or from his stand-up, or from his show, Talk Show, The Game Show, or from his book, My Life as a Goddess. Ladies and gentlemen, give it the hell up for Guy
Brim!
Good to be here.
Good to have you, buddy. Thanks for coming on the show.
Good to be here in his grace.
In
with
his
a
grace.
Capital H.
In his grip is a signature we've seen on some emails.
Yep.
In his grip.
A real
grip.
Sign off. Yeah. In his grip.
And those people are not talking about the Lord.
Can I first ask two broader questions about the podcast that I could have done my own research
Please
about?
Please.
Yeah, sounds like you didn't really listen to the pod, Guy.
I'm sorry. I try to most of the time.
He's an experiential
man.
You
don't have 3 hours laying around to listen to?
I mean, look, I always enjoy listening to Kevin. I have to make my judgments.
That's fair.
I would also like to note, Kevin is the only one among us who is really, like, clothing-wise, sartorially, ready for church. Like,
that's true. Well, he did come from church.
I did go to church today.
That's absolutely correct.
But my two questions are, what is the best Christian film you guys have watched?
Oh, and good question.
And then second part is, have you at all considered, like...
ending the podcast.
Oh, no, just LDS cinema. Because there is the rich world of LDS cinema.
Okay, we haven't touched LDS at all, and I know it's time. I think we're just like kind of forget about it because it's a little bit out of our wheelhouse, but I would absolutely love to investigate it.
Yeah. Well, there's also the nobody beats up my little brother but me thing, too. Where
yes,
it's like
absolutely.
Yeah. Protestant mainline Christianity. It's like, I feel like we can speak in a way that does not feel mean.
No, absolutely.
Even when it's critical, for LDS stuff, I'm very...
yeah.
Sensitive to like, oh, what if someone gets their feelings hurt? Or if I'm just stupid and I do get some facts of the matter wrong about it. Is there an Anne Hathaway LDS movie that I'm making up?
Is there?
There is some Disney movie that's about a Mormon missionary.
Oh.
And I want to say Anne Hathaway's in it, but that can't be true, right?
Yeah, because she couldn't be a missionary.
She couldn't?
Missionary. No. Well, if they're on mission, it's only boys that are allowed
It's only
to go.
Boys. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
No, girls. I think girls can go on missions, but...
the two-year mission?
I could be wrong.
Oh, see,
maybe
these
like
are the kind of facts
missions,
we'd get wrong.
Yeah,
on the
I know.
Show.
We need an LDS like lover or former on the show.
Yeah, I think we would do it if we could find like a great like Mormon guest that could dictate that and kind of hold our hand through it a little
bit.
And be our cover when we screw it up.
But what's the best Christian movie you guys have watched?
Are you saying Christian like Christian made movie or a movie about Christianity?
I think Christian made.
Christian made.
I'm going to say, literally, it's I Can Only Imagine, the Dennis Quaid movie about Bart Miller writing the song I Can Only Imagine.
Okay.
I think, technically, that is the best one we've seen. That
is. Yeah, well, technically, maybe. I'd say the best one that I maybe enjoyed the most was Thief in the Night, the 70s like Rapture End Times movie.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, it was really, it was like just bizarre in a way that I kind of enjoyed. So I kind of put that up there.
Yeah, that was more a remnant of a time. That was really, they said they have that saying about like every movie is a documentary about itself. That was definitely a documentary about making a Thief in the Night.
Yeah.
And the thing these young men and women were going through in the 70s. Yeah, that was super interesting to watch. But
kind
of
like a shittily made movie, but it ended up being kind of artsy on accident. And that's kind of why I liked it.
But I could see myself, if it is, if we still lived in a society and structure media-wise where we still had Saturday afternoons where it's like, what's on TV? Turn on TNT.
Yeah.
I could see myself coming across I Can Only Imagine being like, this is fine.
Uh-huh.
Like there was nothing about it that was super obnoxious or super problematic. It was just like a fine film.
Oh, you know what? I liked, I don't know if this one counts, but the Jennifer Garner movie, Miracles from Heaven.
Oh, yes.
Have you heard about that one? Yeah, where the, her little girl, falls this is based on a true story, but falls into a tree and is cured of her, like, deathly illness. That one was fun. Queen Latifah was in that one.
She was.
I forget about that. It was like a, it was a pretty good movie.
Are you in or out on Garner? I feel like you'd be out.
Oh, I hate Jennifer Garner.
Why? What did she do?
I hate her stupid baby voice. And I feel like she, like, there is never any weight or heft or gravitas to what she does. She seems to be a woman who is about assuring men that she's not going to do anything that is challenging to them. And I only like, I like ladies who are a little more challenging.
I get that.
That's interesting because I see her as often playing the like type A Reese Witherspoon, like, grading person.
Were either
sometimes
of you
too.
Fans or stands of the Alias series on ABC.
No, I missed it.
I never watched. Though I have to say, everyone I know who has had a personal interaction with Jennifer Garner assures me that she's like the best person ever.
I believe it.
My friend was just like an assistant on the ABC lot. And she like came into his office once and learned his name and then always remembered his name after that for like years afterwards, not interacting with him much.
Wow.
And he was like, I love her.
I think she's the real deal. I've been waiting for the Renaissance. I thought camping would be it. It was not.
No.
A friend of mine went through literally almost the exact same arc with Jennifer Garner where he had a very low opinion of her. He was like, no, she kind of bugs me. I think she's annoying and everything. And he was one of those, I would say, I don't even think she's that pretty either. And he was working at ABC at the time, and then he met her, and it was his role that day for what he was doing to, like, show her around and kind of be her, like, right hand for that day. And she gets off the elevator, and his first words are, ah, bah, 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 and he was smitten, found love. And I think for those of us that did watch Alias back in the day, we know that every Jennifer Garner role that's come after is just her incognito, undercover. The true Jennifer Garner, Sidney Bristow, 2001 through 2003
Let's
or
get
4.
Ready to go fight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's
I still
what
have
it's
the vaguest
by.
Understanding of what Alias is about, but I know she fights in it.
I mean, it's
She's
nothing.
Slap some men.
Check it out for who Bradley Cooper really is. Check it out for her relationship with Victor Garber.
I mean, I always love a Victor Garber vehicle.
I mean, that thing, that introduced me to the Garbs.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, that was formative in a lot of ways.
Hey, Victor Garber, like, so solidly establishes the rule that older gay men is allowed to play straight.
Yeah.
Like, we just don't care once you're, like, dad or boss.
Absolutely. Hashtag spy daddy. Well, Guy, thank you for coming on the show. What is your background with religion?
So, my mom is a Jew, and my dad was actually raised Southern Baptist, and we were, there wasn't a synagogue in our town, and my grandmother was an Arkansas Jew, so that she was a little bit sort of, like, private about it.
Oh,
so it
because
was,
of racism, or because she just, like, didn't have a, like, solid hold on it?
No, just because, like, people were bad about it back in Arkansas. And so I actually ended up going to Baptist churches growing up more than anything Jewish, but my mom really pushed Judaism in the home and was very, like, read this stuff and all of that. So, and I come from a pretty Christian town to the extent that, like, my public school a couple of times had Christian speakers come, and I, when I was like a junior, went into the principal's office and in a very like civil libertarian Jewish kind of way was like, you're not allowed to do that. Those men were telling us about Jesus. And also this school is like, the school was like 20% Sikh, had a decent number of Muslims there as well.
Oh, wow.
But they were always just like, white people do your white people thing. And of course, Catholic Latinos. And I was like, you're not allowed to do this. They were talking to us about Jesus. And the guy was like, yes, but they were non-denominational. Like, it's not like... It's not like they were Baptists or Lutherans. They were just talking non-denominationally about... It was... this one specifically were these, like, bodybuilders who tore they like
were they oh, the I've power heard. Teams?
They, yeah, were, the, they I've were the heard power about team. This group.
Yes. Yes,
you saw the power team.
Oh my gosh! Yes, I've heard and about the power team.
I tried to raise them as a like civil liberties issue.
Good for you, honestly.
And I got shut down.
I would see the biopic about that. Guy Branum takes the power team to the Supreme Court one day.
Funny, I love that cop out too. If it's not a denominational, so they don't have an extra grind.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting shield. I think you see a lot with. Not genie, but like a certain flavor of speaker where it definitely is like Christ and Christian and Jesus infused. But because there is that lack of denominational tie, that it can kind of get written off as Tony Robbins when it needs to be.
Yeah.
And then can get literally text written off when it needs to be as well, like so given the circumstance. Huh. That's so interesting. And this was a town in Northern California?
In Northern California. Like, most of the white people were like Dust Bowl refugees. So, I don't, are you a Californian?
Yeah, not really, kind of.
So like in the 30s, people from Arkansas and Oklahoma came over to like Orange County and Bakersfield and then went up.
And like Salinas.
Yeah, went up the valley. And so there's a lot of evangelical Assembly of God, Southern Baptist kind of culture going up the middle.
Yeah.
Like when I asked my mom what a Methodist was, she said, they think divorce is okay and they let gay people go to their church.
And you said, sign me up.
No,
my two favorite things.
I was like, they seem bougie and fancy. Tell me more.
Yeah, that sounds lush.
And then public Judaism for us was just anytime my mom or grandma would drive past where the synagogue used to be in Marysville,
mm-hmm.
they would say, that's where the shul used to be.
Did your family do like Shabbat or like dinner services and stuff like that together?
We would always do Passover. We would like Passover and Hanukkah were really sort of the like official things that we would do.
Uh-huh.
The stuff that was more synagogue based, because also my family was like poor and working class. And I think my mom would have been very embarrassed to like go to Sacramento. She was embarrassed to like go to Sacramento and like go to synagogue there. So it was mostly sort of like the home based things. And she wasn't, I think Shabbat seemed more like more trouble than it was worth. But like we did, she always did Pesach because she thought that Passover, because she thought that was like important for like identity purposes.
Yeah.
And Hanukkah's not hard, you know?
In the way that like a Yom Kippur, or like a...
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's kind
of
built in.
But she did a lot of... She bought me a lot of books and she bought like... She always made sure that I like had books about Judaism and prayer books and stuff like that so that I would be able to like do... Like learn what I needed to learn and be able to do what I needed to do.
Was mm-hmm. her concern like more I want you to retain this identity or I find that this religious thought is like important for you to have fundamentally?
Like for her, it was primarily identity based. Mm-hmm. Like she was... Yeah, because I mean, Judaism is interesting. It's sort of like so much of the practice of Judaism is just about maintaining identity.
Yeah, and like, just remembering.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like half of that stuff in Leviticus is just like to mark you as separate. And my mom thought it was part of her job to like mark me and my sister as separate. And my grandma too. And I don't think she, just because they had been sort of like plopped in the middle of a bath of Baptists and Assembly of God for such a long time, I don't think she thought a lot about the theological differences in this God. You know, it's like all the same God from the Old Testament, but it really is different ways of construing that God in like significant ways. And I think I ended up having to get that from books. It didn't really cross my mom's mind. And then... you know Moshe Kasher, right?
Uh-huh. Of course, yeah.
His brother is a rabbi, and I've been listening to his podcast where he interprets Torah portions. And there are times when, like, you get this, like, the God of the Talmud, who is, like, the relationship with humanity and with Jews is so different. Like, you know, God, like, in one of them he talks about... There's a portion of, I think, Leviticus where it says that you're offering a goat as a sin offering for God. And always before it references as a sin offering for yourself. and this question of like, why it's at the end
of the like God have sins that you need to forgive him
It's at the end of the month. It's at the end of the month. And the argument, the Talmudic argument is that God's diminishment of the sun, of the moon in the course of creation was an unnecessary diminishment of something. And the notion that like God makes mistakes as well in a way that, and also sort of like, I mean, that is something I do think I got from my mom, was this concept of like argument and response with God, that sort of Judaism is important to Judaism and is not important to Christianity in the same way. And things like, just the idea of Israel meaning strives with God, that it all goes back to a wrestling match with an angel, and that like our religion is very much about still being engaged in that wrestling match, was something that I sort of appreciated and picked up over time.
It's an interesting thing too, because things like Judaism, I think some people's popular conception or notion of it does have to revolve around those ideas of the ritual, or especially like Hasidic Jews and the way they express that stuff, and then Protestant Christianity. Less so with Catholicism, because there's a good amount of ritual built into that too.
Yeah.
And Protestant Christianity is kind of like, it's rock and roll church, or it's kind of loosey-goosey. But then the thing underneath that is a very rigid, strict idea of how you are supposed to behave and interact with God. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that it's almost like a mirror flipped image of, there's all these things that we may think of as like, oh, doing the most in this sense, and then you do Yom Kippur, and then you did this sort of meal, and it's blah, 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 and this is kosher, blah, blah, blah. But then what that is all pointing to is a relationship with God that does have latitude for anger, disagreement, conversation, dialogue, pushback, all that stuff.
Well, also, I think the concept in Judaism that, which is very different from particularly evangelical Christianity, that the word on the paper is not enough. That like it is only through our participation and engagement that it achieves a meaning that is functional. And I feel like so much Protestant Christianity, in divorcing itself from institutions or other scholarship, is about, I read this word, and between the word and God like giving me inspiration, I understand. And I feel like to many Protestant Christians, Judaism's like weird, like all of our weird rules that people made up seems like bad, like, you know, against the word of God. But it's like both of them are sort of like extremities. Like, yeah. You know, like it, at the end of the day, it does take your specific practice to turn any of that stuff into meaning.
The technical theological term for that idea that exists in Protestant Christianity is sola scriptura, or might be solo scriptura, which is like, it's only scripture that you need to understand the will, the mind of God, the character and nature of God. And I wonder if that sort of thinking calcifies with age out of laziness, in a way, or belief system, because there is something that as you get older and older, part of your curiosity or hunger or thirst becomes dormant. You want to compartmentalize more things in your life, and you just want to have less stuff to worry about, yeah, in some ways. So the idea of like, no, this is something that you have to keep investigating and keep questioning and like test this, test that. And you are as much an alive and active a part of this equation of understanding what this means as the scripture is just kind of exhausting. And then all those people become in power or remain in power, or if it really is like a genuine, because of course we see as many young people that feel as strong a conviction, but I wonder what that is and why that is such a fought against idea or belief system in so much of Protestant Christianity.
Yeah, it feels like, at least the impression I got a lot growing up with the Bible was like, the Bible's meaning itself is rigid, and it's up to you to figure out what that rigid structure actually is. Uh-huh. And like, that's through discovery and through your life or whatever, but more is like, you're trying to align with what the Bible is actually saying. And quite often, like, the translation or the interpretation is laid out for you already. And it's like, yes, no, it means this. It actually means that like gay people aren't allowed to do this or whatever. And you just need to like conform eventually. Mm. And I so love this sort of like interaction with the Bible, which is like, no, I get to argue with it. I get to quibble about what the rules could actually be. And I get to use my life experience to inform the word and like let it breathe back instead of just being like, what I need to figure out what the treasure is here and get in there. And then that's what I'll believe or whatever, instead of engaging with it.
That the Bible isn't a long drawn out version of National Treasure to Book of Secrets.
Yeah, and so it's right there. And so it's like, no, it's definitely this, and you just have to get there yourself.
What were your feelings towards God during this time when you were being raised with all these ideas?
I thought it was so wonderful and beautiful and magical, and I liked getting to be part of Judaism. And then I hit that point when I realized I was sexually attracted to men. And I mean, like, I think that's also one of the reasons I was more attracted to Judaism. Not that it is more lenient in its approach to homosexuality. I mean, in practice for Reform Jews, like, they're more chill with it. But, like, Judaism is, like, the thing is like, I feel like that line in Leviticus, like, just saying you can't do this. In Christianity, there is supposed to be an alignment between, like, inclination and law, like the notion of like it's as bad to think a thing as it is to do it, where Judaism is just like, just don't do it. Like, it's not like pigs are evil. It's not like wearing a linen cotton blend is evil. It's not like having not wearing a talus is evil. You just have to do it. Like, you just have to, like, the, you know, my religion doesn't know what happens to me when I die, but it does know how much horseradish I have to eat on Passover, you know? And, like, there's something nice about that clarity. And I think that disjuncture between sort of, like, inclination where inclination and behavior, where I really was able to say for many years of my life, I will want to do this thing, but I will simply not do this thing, and thereby I will continue to circumscribe my life and, you know, like, sanctify myself to God.
And that was, for a lot, a portion of your life, that was religiously motivated?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, I didn't know that about you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's sort of a thing of, I knew that my parents would hate me, but also, like, what does it mean? Like, the religious ramifications mattered to me a lot, and it's one of the things I try to express in stand-up, but I'm never able to, like, get into it enough, is, like, I think one of the important factors in coming out of the closet is, like, you kind of have to kill God in your heart, and you kind of have to sort of, like, be willing to step away from your family. And people are very ready to say, like, no, it's not necessary, all of that. But, like, on the page, there's not really a religion that wants us. And I think that that is an interesting sort of thing. And so I think that that also informs what my practice is now, because my practice now really is engaging with the parts of Judaism that celebrates God in creation, you know, like the fact that God gave us a wonderful world to enjoy. I mean, it's so funny. Moshe actually brought his brother to my Passover Seder 2 or 3 years ago, and I made a couple of jokes about God not existing, which is like, the thing is like, you're allowed to fist fight with God up to a point, but there are certain
lines,
moves that are barred, you know?
Yeah.
And he was like, kind of like bumped on it, and then afterwards was like, I realized I went to something very cool, you know. And I think that, like, I just have to set up the terms for relationship to Judaism that work for me now, understanding that, like, correct adherence to Judaism is not something that I am capable of doing in my life, and also that we have a different relationship to sin and repentance than Christianity does, because that weird relationship to, and I think it is sort of like inappropriately toyed with by a lot of public Christians, of sort of like, and now I feel bad about it, so it's all gone away and we don't have to talk about it, where Judaism's like keeping score more and less, you know? It's just like, you did that, Like, there, you'll repent for it, but also just like, you're supposed to not do that. And it, like, how your heart or repentance lines up with it is just a different relationship.
Because does the way it expresses itself in Judaism, is it more repenting to your neighbor, your brother, your sister? Is that the difference?
I mean, you're supposed to do that, but it's not like there isn't this concept of the intercession of Christ sort of like, you know, removing that sin. You still did it, you know? And it's like, and there are ramifications for like whether you're clean and allowed to touch the Torah or like that sort of thing. But there's also just like, it's not going to go away. Like, you did it, but also like, we're all sort of doing this imperfectly. We're all having to argue about what the best way to wear your prayer shawl is. Like, we're all having, you know, these things are ongoing arguments, and you do the best you can, and you understand if you didn't do the best you can, that's on you, and that's not going away.
Yeah, so almost like with a lot of other religions, sin or like sin issues, as you want to call them, it's almost like, okay, take out the trash, it's out of here, it's not in here now. And with Judaism, in the way you've experienced, it's more like, it's in here, sit with it.
Yeah.
But it's actually not, it's, you're still okay, and it's not like a defining part of you that you have to sit in it. Is that closer to the idea?
I mean, what's interesting though is that like, my sin is a defining, like my core sin to Judaism is a defining part of me. So what do I learn from that?
Yeah.
You know, what do I learn from that? And for a long time, I was like, the answer is to just not do it. And I have to assume and believe that there is some other lesson to be learned from this situation. And Reform Jews or Reconstructionist, actually not Reconstructionist Jews, but Reform Jews, there is a notion of just like, those are the bad parts. Those are the homophobic and misogynistic parts that were added by culture, blah, blah, blah. Ignore those parts. And I can't really do that. I just have to say, it is what it is, and accept the world and my life for what it is.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you... I don't know, still go with it and still keep in mind that like this part of the Bible or this part of Judaism, I can't erase, and I can't like make up a new version, because then I'm probably not even doing Judaism anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, how do you live in that?
Like,
because you're not denying, you're like, no, I know this isn't bad, of like my identity. Like, I don't believe that this is sinful.
Yeah. Like, it's a question of, and it's weird because
I'm asking for a friend.
No, the thing is like, I think on the one hand, I do sort of like experience an intellectual doublethink of both. This is a cultural construction of my people that was used to organize us and keep us alive in the desert. And also the notion that like, there is a Hashem behind it who is trying to guide me or teach me something, because I do feel like Judaism is a magnificent game that does teach us more about the world. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something neat about the concept of Hashem defining people outside of it.
What is Hashem?
Sorry. So Hashem is just what Jews call God in secular situations, because there's the unspeakable name of God, and then there's the word for Lord that you use in prayers and stuff, and then sort of Orthodox Jews would just say it means the name, would say Hashem in conversation, and it's weird that I'm using it, because I could probably just
no
say,
you can say it. That's fine,
say God.
I like it.
But like the thing is, it's like isn't there something interesting about the notion of God saying, like, well, there are states, but then there are territories that don't get senators, but they're still part of America, but about humanity, you know? And sort of like saying that, you know, possibly, do I have a role towards Judaism that is parallel towards that of people who are heterosexual, who are able to fully participate in it? Is my job to... Be part of this criticism? Is this, is my, you know, like, what is it that I'm getting out of it? And the things that I like most are the things that, like, I think that there's something very lovely about homosexuality, because I don't get the promise of another life in either of the most conventional senses, of an afterlife or progeny. So I must love this world. And in Judaism, this world is an important, and the female aspect of God. That table, this light in the room, is the Shekinah. Like, the female aspect of God is the physical world that exists here. And understanding how that elevates and celebrates our lives, I think is fun, to understand that, like, I'm playing only this game. So what do I do here? Does that make sense?
No, I know exactly what you mean.
It brings an intense amount of presence to your life.
Yes.
Well, I'm sure you add this whole other color to what other Jews could probably expect from life. Because I think that's so valuable, of being like, can you find enough joy, enough divinity in just your lifespan here?
Yes.
Without needing an afterlife or a legacy to, like, give it meaning or to give it substantial divine weight or something like that. That is really profound.
And there's a lot of Judaism that really is about that. Like, the fact that all of our holidays center on, then you didn't die.
Yeah.
Like, almost, but then you didn't die.
Don living.
And there are also, like, sorry that we're just talking about my relationship to Judaism.
No, I love it.
This is what we want.
Okay. Can we talk briefly about two books of the Bible?
Yes.
Please.
They are as follows: Ruth and Esther. We've got, Ruth is very closely associated with Shavuot, the holiday of the Bible being given. And Esther, of course, has Purim, the holiday about us not dying.
We all remember Home for Purim from for your consideration, right. Christopher Guest movie.
So it's just the fact that, like, Esther is legally, officially, racially Jewish, and in no other way is a practicing Jew. And that manages to save her and her people. And Ruth isn't just not Jewish. Ruth, like, there is a prohibition in the Bible from people from wherever she's from, Moab. Moabites can't convert to Judaism. Like, she is, like, by the law, forbidden from becoming Jewish, but still becomes Jewish. And that is enough. And her holiday is the holiday of giving
the Bible.
The whole Bible. Uh-huh. That excludes her. That excludes her from participation.
Yeah.
Is also her holiday. And the fact that you have ironies like that, where the Bible is saying, like, not practicing is enough and just practicing is enough. And I feel like there is a world of interpretations and a world of approaches. And I like that. And the fact that it's both about ladies is also cool.
Yeah, that sounds so, like, not to project, but it sounds Christian to me, too, of that idea of, like, there is no slave, there is no Greek, there is no woman or whatever. It's just faith, and you're allowed to be in.
Yes.
And I'd never thought about, I'm sure someone's mentioned that in passing, but I just had never thought about that with Ruth or Esther.
But I mean, the thing about Esther is, like, Esther's not even really faith. Like, Esther's...
No, she doesn't even talk about God.
She doesn't talk about God. She's about faith. Like,
it's all basically just, like, nationality identity.
Yes.
Anyway.
Uh-huh. And I like that, you know, it's... In stuff like that, I feel like you see the gigantic aspect of this. That, like, in the frivolities, I think you can see the gigantic aspect of things. And then you also have the specifics, which are terribly important.
I love hearing you talk about this, too, because I feel like it speaks to where I'm at a little bit, too, where there's this in-between that I'm straddling of, like, I really love this, like, tradition of the faith that I have, and I've grown up with it, and there's a lot that I care about, but then there's these big gaping sections of the foundational text that I don't agree with and I can't abide, and the way I've learned for
I'm
so long...
I'm pretty sure you should remain silent in the church and let Kevin and I handle
what?
This.
Sorry, never mind. Is there a women's retreat I could go talk about this with?
Children, come kind of learn from me.
But then being like, well, the whole structure that I love says that if I deny these small aspects, then I'm out. So yeah. Like my option is either all in or all out, basically. And I'm trying to fight for like, no, I'm not all out, but I don't know where it belongs now because these people may not. And these people I maybe aren't even technically Christians. So like, what am I doing? Yeah. You know? And that's the weird place.
Well, and the thing is, the things that we're talking about with that stuff, and even the Judaism that you're describing, is that you can find your strain that does affirm all the things that you would want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like I went to a church this morning where the pastor's queer, women are leading the thing, everyone's like, all the stigma and all the shit that we were raised with where it's like, well, this kind of sucks, and there's a part of my heart that always knows that. You can find that strain. But are you just saying, like, you feel guilty participating in that because you don't want it to be, like, an easy answer?
I think, like, I'm saying, yeah, not I feel guilty, but it's not like... I'm trying to think of the right word. Like, it's not scientifically rational to say that that's still Christian because yes. It's not actually following to the T the thing that's supposed to be Christian, or at least from what I've learned.
Yeah.
But, you know, can I accept and grow? And maybe that's just because it's foreign to me, and find that, like, oh, no, there is a different way of interpreting this Bible where I don't have to be all or nothing. I can find my strain.
My favorite joke when walking to Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur services at Berkeley Hillel, I always went to the conservative services that were in Hebrew. And as we passed the Reform services, someone would always say, you know, my biggest problem with the Reform services, all the crosses. And just that thing of like, once you start pulling that stuff away, what's left?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like I remember talking about that with Megan O'Giblin, who was saying like, yeah, but you know, that's cool that you're having maybe a more liberal interpretation of the Bible, but I don't think that's what the Bible is actually saying. So you're kind of doing gymnastics, and she doesn't agree with the Bible.
Tippity tappity, tippity.
Yeah, but
you're
doing tap dancing, yeah. You know, and you need to like be real with yourself about that. And mm-hmm. You're like, yeah, I guess that could be true. Can I still live here? I don't know.
That like more liberal sect of whatever the religion may be is kind of a LaCroix version of what the actual text is saying.
Yeah, yeah.
In some ways where it's like...
And we're being like, no, it's not. It's the real one.
Yeah,
like, it's okay.
It's coconut. Is it coconut? Oh, no, it's kind of coconut, I guess.
But I also love my LaCroix church, too, you know? And I think that's... And I, like, totally think it's serving a purpose, and I'm, like, rooting for it. I just don't know if it's, like, rational, you know, or some level.
I totally understand what you're saying. That's such a strange contradiction to live within. Because, no, and I feel like that's something I fought against, too. And that's why I was going to that conservative church for so long. The theologically conservative. It was not a MAGA church.
Because you're like, well, at least it's being honest with what this word is. You know?
Yeah, and I was like, well, and even though I can disagree, I can push this way and that way and be positive influence. Yeah. What's that?
Sorry, honest may not be the word, like technical, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, but just in a way where it's like, I'm not kidding myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now it's like, am I kidding myself? Well, to a degree.
Yeah, but I like your idea of like, well, maybe I am a kind of walking contradiction and maybe that's important.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm part of this fold and they need to acknowledge me and like figure out where I belong to.
I like the thing about Judaism is like any of those rough spots that you can't sand down. That's a question we have to figure out.
Yeah.
You know, you don't walk past it. You spend hundreds of years arguing with dead people about it.
And then it's integrated into, the tradition of faith.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then, we have to eat or not eat or wear something weird.
That's right.
And it's complicated by the fact of there are actual people telling me you don't belong in this anymore because you don't believe Jesus is entirely real or not. And I'm like, well, come on.
Can I tell you guys about something lovely that happens?
Yes.
One time I went to this show at UCB in New York, and for some reason there were just a quarter of the audience was Orthodox Jews. And
Orthodox Jew, like that's the one that has like the hair tattoo.
Yeah. So like you had men in kippot. I mean, they weren't like Hasidim, but like you had men in yarmulkes,
okay.
And the women were if they were married, were wearing wigs or scarves over their heads. And I went out after Michelle Wolf, who's a hilarious comic and who like did a bunch of crowd work with them, but was a lot of the crowd work it was in the territories that I would have done. And so I went out and it was like, well, I got to do something. And then I like did deep Judaism material at them for a while and, you know, accessible enough that the rest of the audience can get it. But it was very interesting having this moment of connection where I have a weird relationship to those people because like they would never acknowledge me as correctly the thing that they are, but they also cannot completely define me away because of this, like, ethnic aspect to things.
Yeah.
And they were the coolest and the best. Uh-huh. And it was, like, really nice. And it would be interesting to talk to more people like that about this sort of thing, because... it would be interesting to hear the practicality of the way that they would approach how I should be leading my life. I'm sure that most of them would just be like, well, you shouldn't do that. You know, like, yeah.
You think they would still say, you're Jewish, but you're not, you shouldn't do that.
I think they would say, Jewish, like, yeah, you're such a wonderful person. Like, you should not have sex with men. Yeah. Like, and there's just like no way around that. And I wonder how they would try to deal with that.
Yeah.
If, also understanding that that means cutting me off from a significant aspect of, like, the loveliness that there is here in this world.
Mm-hmm. While you still want to participate in those things.
Yeah.
That's the funny thing.
It would be easy for them to be like, well, he doesn't even like this, you know, and he hates us, so easy to kick him out.
Yeah.
And there's something so wonderful about people whose life bears witness to, in some cases, being an annoying pebble in someone's shoe.
Yes.
Wouldn't it be so nice if you were just like, all right, I'm out, I won't be annoying, and I'm going to cling to this whatever, like, secular or like what you would think of as like a hedonistic blah, blah, blah perspective. But no, I do love this, and you cannot devalue me for these ethnic reasons, for my own natural appetites towards participation.
Yeah.
As well as just like, I'm one of you. Like, you have to do something with
that.
Yeah.
I mean, God didn't make a world that worked. You know, he didn't make, like, a clean clock that just functions. And a lot of people construe that as, like, a world of temptation and the truth. But I prefer to see it from a, he gave us lots of questions that we have to figure out in the same way that we had to figure out, like, how photosynthesis works.
Yeah.
A lot of holes for us to fill in.
Yeah. So what you're saying is I'm God too.
Yes.
Cool.
Well, you'll believe God is a woman.
Yeah.
Or a guy is a God.
We were made in his image. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know. Image bears. Hey, thanks for sharing all that.
Man, I love hearing your perspective. Super interesting. Like, I could talk to you a long time about that.
Thanks.
Halfway through listening to God, I was like, wait a minute, is this podcast good? Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back with more good Christian fun. And good Jewish fun. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now, Caroline, I got a question for you.
Yes.
How is your social battery right now? Are you feeling drained? Do you got a lot of energy right now? Where are you at with things as we speak today?
Well, you know, when you're pregnant, famously, your social battery is endless, actually, because you're powered by a baby battery.
It's like someone slaps a mag charger onto your phone.
Exactly.
And you can go for like 24 hours more.
I am the U.S. Marines of taking down social situations. I feel incredible all the time. So yeah, that's where I'm at. What about you?
Wow. Well, I'm feeling a little drained. And sometimes it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, which is maybe the zone I'm in right now. Mm. And for me, spreading myself too thin is like going to a lot of like Garfield events recently that have been happening over town.
Oh,
with
yeah.
The new movie coming out.
I know you get so excited about those. You got to spread those out a little more.
I know. And I need to really protect my energy and stuff. But, you know, it's worth asking ourselves, what's the right amount of socializing and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need a little me time, a little alone, introverted time. But either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So things like tuning into yourself, feeling and understanding what you want and need yourself, and then being able to communicate that to those around you, and then most especially to yourself.
Well, if you can't get pregnant immediately, that sounds like a pretty good solution as a backup.
And again, I think I might have even said this before. If I could get pregnant, I would, just to understand what it's like to have even like boundless energy that
right.
can kind of propel me into
to feel
like,
as incredible as to, you could feel.
To exercise more, mm-hmm. to be working out like 3 hours a day.
Exactly.
Working 9 hours a day on top of that. And then
good
going,
brain.
Going out 2 hours. Yes, such a good brain on top of that. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, maybe give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. If you don't like the first person you get, don't worry, there's another one on the docket. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/goodchristianfun today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
10%?
.com/goodchristianfun. You got some thoughts on that 10%?
That's a good deal.
It is.
I agree. First month?
And especially because 10% is where I'm feeling my battery is right now. That's betterhelp.com/goodchristianfun.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back to Good Christian Fun and Good Jewish Fun. This episode, let's get back in and dive into the topic. Come on, let's go. What you just heard, Guy Branum, was a contemporary Christian music artist named Stephen Curtis Chapman. There's a song called Dive. He did recently perform on Fox and Friends, so I don't know if we can playing it.
I know.
Although if we start canceling, quote unquote, every Christian artist on this show, we won't have any more to play. We
what
can play
Gun. What does canceling mean to you?
I don't know. Well, I'm just saying, quote unquote, canceling because it's a elastic definition. If we canceled people on this show, where it's like cancel in this definition being we can't play their stuff or talk about them anymore.
Oh, okay.
There's nothing to talk about.
We've talked about canceling a lot, and then I realized the other day, like, I don't know what our definition of canceling is. Is it just ignoring people? That seems a very gentle cancel to me.
I never thought about it before, but there is a way that cancel culture has a Christian element to it.
Sure.
Of you are out of salvation, go away. Where I do think my approach to so many of these things is a very Jewish sort of like, keep doing what you're doing and we're just going to write a lot of think pieces.
Oh, that's funny. No, see, actually the Christian thing would be like, if you say you're sorry or even pretend to be sorry,
yes,
you're in, we're fine, we have to be good and
that's
just
a beautiful
accept
point.
You no matter what the consequences.
Oh, where you're saying...
I'm saying there's a good and a bad.
Yeah. General culture would be very suspicious and test the validity of every apology or every...
I'm saying Christians, like a Christian reaction or a Christian canceling probably
is pretty
really
undoable.
Exist. Yeah.
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 I get that.
Anyway. Canceling.
Did you have any exposure to contemporary Christian art or anything like that growing up?
The other people at my high school were really into it. So my knowledge of contemporary Christian music is only from the early 90s. So the things I can name are Jars of Clay.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, Jars
of Clay. And the Newsboys.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Newsboys. Like, those are two of the big ones. Uh-huh. Two of the big five, I would say.
I like those two.
Newsboys you like?
I've kind of grown on the Newsboys. We went to a Newsboys concert.
Oh, really?
Like a year and a half ago?
Voluntarily. February of last year.
Yeah.
They were at the Wiltern.
It was a blast.
Oh, that's crazy.
It was so fun.
Strange.
Yeah.
It was a good time. Switchfoot's playing there next month.
Oh, really?
Good for them. Is Switchfoot... Christian?
They are Christian, but right. They're chill surfer bro Christian.
Okay.
Yeah, and they kind of started out like real defined Christian, and then they were kind of like, don't make us be Christian all the time, and now they're, yeah, whatever.
Oh, and of course, Amy Grant. I remember Amy Grant making the pivot and people being pretty judgmental.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a pretty defining pop culture moment for all of us. We all remember some. We were all part of that. Yes, Grantgate, 1994, whenever it was. Well, let's talk about another prominent woman in Christian art, Jeannie Robertson.
Mm-hmm.
Jeannie Robertson first came on my radar when Guy... tweeted about her probably a year ago,
yes,
now or around that time, about her stand-up stuff. There was a clip that I have no sense of what is viral or not anymore. I have no sense of what's big or not anymore, especially on YouTube. But the lady has 220,000 or 200,000 subscribers on her YouTube channel.
Wow.
The clip that you posted has over 10 million views, and she is someone that defines herself as a Christian humorist or speaker, not a comedian. She never calls herself a comedian.
Can I read a quote about that?
Yes.
So she said, humor is not about one-liners or being able to tell jokes. It's about accepting things about yourself that can't be changed and finding the humor in the situations around you. Things happen on a daily basis that are really funny, but people let the funny stuff get away. So she, and she does this every time someone talks to her or like interviews her about her. She always says, I'm not a comedian. I'm a humorist. I tell stories about my life that are funny. Which seems such like a bullshit like differentiation. I was just like, okay, Jeannie, I know what you're trying to say.
It's interesting because I always, like anyone who defines themselves as a humorist, I'm like, what's your problem? I've always said
Mark Twain.
Dave you know? Barry.
I always said if I move back to San Francisco, I have to become a humorist. You know, you've like got a column in the Chronicle and you just sort of like, oh, I've got an insight about Fisherman's Wharf.
Yeah. Well, and I think what she was trying to do was define herself as like family comedy kind of thing. And she saw comedians as like Richard Pryor and Bill Cosby of like punchline, setup, punchline, and then like it's mean.
Well, I mean, the thing is like I found her because one of the women who hosts Lady to Lady posted some Christian comic who had like an hour on Netflix or something. And I went and watched a bad clip and then I clicked on another one to like laugh at the Christian comedian. Mm-hmm. But it was Jeannie. And I, by the end of it, was like, she's good at what she does.
She's very good. And just
kept with it. But the notion of these audiences that are mostly composed of church-going people over 50 that were doing this in the theaters of Christian colleges and stuff like that. It's the safe, comfortable conversation of we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like not talking about the world outside of that very much. And I thought that I would find that like insular and gross. But she's very good at what she does.
That's the thing that's a pebble in our shoe about this sort of thing. Because we've talked about what's interesting about her definition of comedian versus humorist versus speaker is that Christian comedy as a circuit does exist. That, like, Mark Lowry is a popular Christian comedian. That guy at Kev on Stage that had that clip around going around about rank the Doritos versus the Fritos versus the blah, blah, blah. He defines himself as a Christian comedian.
Yeah.
So that labeling process is like would be accepted even within this subculture. So it's funny that she even goes to further lengths to still soften, at least on a branding sense, her image or her palatability in all these different spaces.
Well, I do like the fact that part of saying that she is a humorous speaker and not a comedian is just sort of accepting, I'm going to need an hour. You know, like, this is not, I'm going to give you 7 minutes of my non-threatening material. It is like, everybody sit down comfortably because I'm going to take some time with this.
No, I see it as like a really brilliant marketing move because, it means she gets booked as a special speaker at these churches or they build an event around her instead of her like passing through and talking at a women's luncheon or something or like doing jokes for youth group.
Well, the thing is I was at my grandparents' church enough to experience a couple of times that weird thing of we stay afterwards and there's this thing. And it was always such a weird thing. And I like watching Jeannie, I'm like, I would have, like, if I, as a 7-year-old boy, had seen a woman who was Miss North Carolina 40 years ago tell adorable, non-threatening stories, I would have just been like, who's she?
In a skirt suit? Of rainbow of skirt suits every time?
No. I mean, leggings? Absolutely.
And a kitten heel?
Oh my God. The mid-grade glamour of it all.
That's what's so fun. But you know what?
She's so medium glamour. I love it, I guess.
What's interesting even about the circuit that we're describing is if you go on her website right now, and she does have like 35 upcoming dates this year.
Yes.
She is an actively working comedian. It's
four of them outside the former Confederacy.
Exactly. Yeah. Like a multi-night stand in Paducah, Kentucky.
I don't think she can travel very far, maybe, too.
She was in Palm Springs a couple of months ago. I thought about going.
Yes. In November, I was going to go, and then I ended up not being in the country. And it made me very sad because I was just like, well, also because for such a long time, all of her videos were from a while ago, and I wanted to, and she's like knocking on 80, and I just wanted to see like, is Jeannie still doing okay?
Yeah, you know, she
is 75 years old. But those venues, it's a pretty broad mix. Like, it's a lot of churches and things like that, but then it's also just like the Tennessee Civic Center and this and that. So she's doing like theater dates too.
Yeah.
It's not just like after the sermon we have a lady coming out. Like, it's doing the venues that I guess you would do in those like very much.
So she probably
smaller
has
markets.
Like a booker on top of being like church. You know,
oh yeah, she calls
time.
Them the Nashville people in one of her specials.
Oh,
I want to
okay.
play this video of her describing herself just to kind of give context to the listener of how she brands herself, how she defines herself, and how she expresses it.
My name is Jeannie Robertson. I am a professional speaker, have been for 54 years, and I'm classified as a humorist. You can use your words to weave longer stories probably than bada bing with the comedian. And the words should be clever. They don't need four-letter words in there with us. Well, I'm from the South. Can you tell? I grew up in North Carolina. My people were from Alabama. I went to Auburn University in Alabama. My whole younger upbringing was the South. And I started my professional speaking career traveling the state of North Carolina and then secondly Alabama because of those reasons. I became Miss North Carolina and I went to the Miss, as we say in the South, the Miss America pageant. And I dropped out of school that year and I traveled and I made more than 500 little speeches. You can't buy that kind of experience. And it took me about a week to say something funny in a speech and people laughed. And I loved it and they did too. Your life is your story because that's all I'm doing. I want people to sit in that audience and say, she's been a fly on the wall of my house. When all I did was find family stories and I stretch them a little bit. Well, I stretch them a lot sometimes.
Oh, that's just shifts in her seat.
Come
she's
on.
So cute.
My whole philosophy in life is we find what we're looking for. But I believe it with all my heart. If you get up and you look for the humor every day, you will find it. And when somebody criticizes you, you do sort of say, well, let me make sure there's not something here that's valid that I need to change. It's the advice I would give to college graduates getting ready to start a career. Can't make everything just like you want it. You got to keep a sense of humor about it. What I found out was in the theater shows, I do have to have a little point. I just can't help it after these years. And it's as simple as reminding people it's your choice whether you want to enjoy every day or not. Nobody else should be able to ruin your day or my day. If we keep a sense of humor, we've got it made. I love to sit out there and see everybody in the audience laughing
of all
and
races
I can look from
and
person
ages.
To person and on the outside I can tell you they don't have the same backgrounds, they're not the same religion, they're not from the same area of the country, they might not be the same race, but when they make eye contact and look at each other and realize we're all laughing at the same thing. When you travel, you have a big opportunity to find a lot of stories. If you do work in one office with the same three people,
okay.
She comes down pretty hard
on
normals.
Coming for me. Jeez, Jeannie.
And to people my age and older, I would say, everybody's got family stories. And if you don't pass them on to the next generation, record them, video them, or write them up. We always talk about you can't take it with you, you can't take it with you. But if we pass on and we have not passed our family stories to the next generation, we take them with us.
Southern Living.
Southern Living Magazine. I love all those little, like, salty tidbits of, like, life advice that's, like, general enough to be sweet and not, like, pointed enough to, like, kind of make you upset. I just
like,
love it.
The way that she is always managing anything that could possibly upset anyone in a very gentle way, I really appreciate. In some of them, you'll hear her, before her first story in any set, where she mocks her husband, she talks about how he likes it and it's okay.
Oh.
In this very, like, please don't think that I am a woman getting above herself.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I have permission from my husband to tell this story.
That's what's so funny is how much she has totally controlled narrative and legacy of whatever their lives are.
Yeah.
But just throwing that in and then doing whatever the hell she wants
to,
obviously.
Yeah, she's allowed to be a little mean.
Does make it okay in the same way that, like, a female speaker wouldn't be threatening in the same way that a female comedian would be. There's all these, like, micro concessions almost. Oh,
that's interesting. People,
yeah.
Which we've seen other like female stand-ups do. Also, what's interesting that is touched on in that video, and it might have happened in another special and I didn't see it or hear it, but she says, and I always have a point, and it is usually that. It's like, look for the funny in life and blah, 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 that kind of, you know, those sort of aphorisms and general positivity. It's not, and that's why we need Jesus, and that's why Christ on the cross. There's not a lot of that in her material.
No, I think the closest she'll get, she'll be like, you know, Methodists be like, or like well, Baptists that, be like, you know.
That's
like
the thing, is she will say your sense of humor was created by God. And then the thing of her sort of like poking fun from to different denominations of mainline Christianity.
Yeah, I know, which is that same like safe insular thing. Like, yes. We all were friends at the end of the day, but we all do know about these denominations.
But there's not at least like an altar call or anything resembling that at the end of her stuff.
Which that happened? I'm sorry if she isn't Christian enough to be Christian.
No. This is what we want.
Right in the saddle.
But what would a sort of like Frosted Tips Christian comedian dude of 33 years of age, how would we see the Lord in his set?
Gosh, well, I mean, the biggest one right now, I don't even want to talk about.
No.
But
it gets like, it's mostly kind of a political thing. Like, it kind of gets into, they make fun of like liberal America for a little while. And then the like punchline is like, we as a culture have lost track of like what's good and moral in our lives, and we need to like keep that, I think is kind of the point.
Caroline and I, a couple of months ago, did go on this was not for the podcast. This was just fun friends hanging out and having fun. But we did go on kind of a YouTube rabbit hole of, let's check out some other Christian comedians we haven't seen before. And they were almost all uniformly disappointing and stuff. Even looking for the best or trying to see the most merit in whatever that they were doing. Mm-hmm. Honestly, Shonda kind of came up on top. And then Jeannie, I would put... maybe above Shonda. I mean, they're working very different.
Shonda was
ways.
Another comedian we talked. She's like comedian.
Yeah,
that might have been one of the clips.
And Shonda is a pretty conservative woman in general. But what I liked about her is I think she's had such a difficult life that she also has like a ton of humility.
Yeah,
in a way where she just like, I don't know, is like a grain of salt with a lot of things.
Yeah, but the politics of that being more explicit. I can't tell you how many times I did Google Jeannie Robertson Trump, Jeannie Robertson MAGA, Jeannie Robertson. Yeah. I didn't find anything, so that's what that is.
Well, she is Miss Congeniality after all. She's fair. Not here to ruffle feathers.
The other aspect of that is, this morning, for reasons unrelated to this, I watched a Chris Lentz sermon. He is...
Oh, Justin Bieber's
pastor?
Oh, Carl Lentz.
Carl Lentz, sorry.
He's the hunky shirtless pastor, bro.
Hunky is not what I would describe him
he
as.
He is self-branding as hunky.
And seeing him sort of like work punchlines into the sermon... were very fun. In one of them, he was like shaking around a box of Legos as like an illustration for what faith is like. And it was just interesting seeing the ways that like it is speaking in front of people, and once you integrate trying to be cool in 2019, jokes come up, and just figuring out what like pastor joking is in America today.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that would be fun coming from an outside safe perspective where you don't have to endure it at all.
In all my experience, I've seen a handful of people do it super well. And the rest, it does feel like digression from larger points where it's like, I need to keep your attention. Here's like a little treat. Here's a story about my kids or something. Uh-huh. I've seen a lot of effective communicators do it where it's more used as a satirical device that illustrates the larger themes in a way. And they're the butt of their own joke. And in that instance, they're not punching down. They're not making themselves the hero or God in the example. Uh-huh. I've seen a few people do it well. I don't know if it's most of them, but a few. Because the skill sets, as I'm sure we've talked about a thousand times, are so... such a Venn diagram of what like a successful stand-up and what a pastor preacher would be able to do.
Do you think there's very little overlap or?
Oh no, I think there's a good amount.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of like, I mean, there's literally preaching to the choir, and of course preachers don't face the same kind of rooms and like arcs that you have to go through with who am I talking to? What kind of audience is this? That is different. But in terms of.
In Protestantism, less drunk.
A little less drunk.
Catholicism, less so.
I do want to play like a little. What's funny is like in trying to make a clip or something for this, her style is not. If we were to compare her to secular comedians, she's not Mitch Hedbergian. She is not a Dimitri Martin.
I know,
she's a Cosby in that style.
I didn't think about that for you guys having to play it, but like the magical thing for me is listening to somebody who's like all about rhythm.
Yes.
Like she's got this joke that is about some guy her husband played basketball with in the 50s that really is the punchline. Is such a small thing. The way that she generates energy instead of dissipating energy in the course of not getting to the thing that she's getting to and doing observational comedy along the way, such that when she gets where she's going, like, here's the thing. She asked her husband if he knows this guy named Bob Halsey or whatever, who came to her show, who played basketball with him.
And this is on YouTube?
This is on YouTube, and there are like 8 minutes between that and the punchline is him finally saying, well, I did play ball with a Bobby Halsey. After 8 minutes of him saying it couldn't possibly be, he didn't know anyone like that. And that is the smallest of possible journeys from premise to punchline.
Yeah.
Like, it is the smallest of possible journeys. And the fact that she makes that worth eight to 10 minutes... is just like craftsmanship of a sort that I am very impressed by.
Yeah.
And you never feel a drop of sweat on the lady's brow.
No. Nope.
It feels like she's just walking down the street every
time
she's talking.
You know it's like memorized. Like there is a certain way she's going to tell this story. Nothing is off the cuff.
Well, and
yet it still feels like engaging and kind of fresh and funny.
Well, and also such a specific level of stage confidence to be able to not have that sweat. It really does require command, but like elegant Miss America commands that is not threatening to any of the men in the room.
Yeah.
In a way that's like neat to watch.
She's just polished. Yeah. Even the way she'll always stand and like draw one foot to the side, you know, so her legs look good. Like every time her little
skirt is
so cute.
We should talk about that just like on a physical level. Being a former Miss America, she was Miss North Carolina, I believe, in 19.
1 year. She did pageants 1 year.
Yeah.
She won this. That's it. And that's, and she brands it on everything. I think it's so fascinating.
And she is 6'2".
And she
is an imposing
presence. On her
website,
will say, Jeannie Robinson bringing humor to new heights. Over and over. It's so funny.
Well, like her branding is so corny. But her material not corny?
I don't know. I mean, it is, but you're kind of enjoying it.
Well, it's also like lived in. Like when there is a gentle corniness to like, you know, her famous 7-Up pound cake story. Like just the notion of like, you know, down here in the South, we don't say someone died. We say they passed. And then she lowers her head. And like that is corny and dorky. But all of the rest of the story is just like her world. And you're just like, I'm on board. Your husband plays badminton a lot? Okay.
Did you watch the one? I don't know if you have this clip where she's like, my husband, I call him LB. Y'all know what
left
LB
brain.
Stands
That's
for.
In
and
every
then everyone goes, left brain.
Oh, yeah. That's a consistent through line. That's like her version of Jim Gaffigan talking about food in every special.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like
it's
that.
Her like her Def Jam like phrase that she says every time. People
brain.
Love it. She must explain what left brain is at some point, but she always just assumes you know what that means.
She has a good chunk that she repeats. And again, I did want to listen to all the specials. I did not have quite enough time to.
Yeah.
Because there's quite a few. And what is a nice gift about all of her specials, though, is that they do sound fake. They sound like cutaway jokes in a documentary now or a Christopher Guest, which include flat out funny, Southern style, talking funny, not just for laughs. Here she is.
No
just
way.
For fun.
Here she
looking
is.
For humor. Fabulously funny. And of course, her latest in 2018, last year, rocking humor, because she had to be in a rocking chair because she did break her femur.
And
she still
so
carried
genius.
On.
And she's like, I'm going to sit in a rocking chair. I'm going to make that part of it. It'll
and I
funny.
Was like, oh, is she fragile? Is she frail? And then you listen to, I mean, in the video she's sitting down, but you listen to it, it's like, not a beat has not been missed here at all.
She's sharp.
An impressive person. Someone who I think is like very beautiful too.
Yes.
Yeah. I love reading her. she has blurbs that you can use on her website. Like if you book her, and there's like dozens of there's so many versions. I'll read a short one. Jeannie Robinson, humor more than a laughing matter, and her positively hilarious style. 6'2" Jeannie Robinson soars to new heights while discussing the difference between being funny and developing a sense of humor that will be an asset for every HR professional. So that's an HR specific booking.
Like if she's doing like a conference or something, like yes. a corporate gig.
And then there's one, the day or meeting or luncheon ain't over till the tall lady speaks. And you'll want to be there. In her positively hilarious style, 6'2" Jeannie Robinson will use her unique blending of humor, the most important factor for a legal administrator.
It truly is.
It's amazing. Like she has figured out her audience.
It is like a five-star Michelin chef working at McDonald's because that's where people go to eat in a way where it's like, I know what I'm doing back here. I have to be here because this is the only restaurant you guys will go to.
6'2".
Well, there's something so wonderful about the fact that like she is so frequently doing these like corporate things, daytime, buses full of church people showing up, that kind of thing. And I'm like, yeah, well, I guess, you know, but she doesn't reach those heights that you would get if you were like drunk at a club. But it's still like, no, I think if I were drunk at a club, I would still be exceedingly satisfied by everything that was going on. It's just a situation of like Jeannie Robinson. I would love to hear her tell stories about a heckler, because you know, at some point in time, yeah. she has had a heckler, but that is not part of her brand and it's not something that she wants. And I'm sure she knows how to deal with them.
Yeah.
But like, that's not part of the brand, you know, at right. all.
Oh, that's an interesting idea that there would be. Because when you do cut out to the reaction shots of the audience, it's a type. It's
they
a
are yeah. hooting. And
they are hollering as well.
They're hollering.
And it is a certain person over a certain age, of a certain race.
Well, and I think she uses that well. Like, I think she plays off of what she's like, this is what I look like. I'm this very poised. I bring up that I'm a pageant winner a lot. I'm very, like, you know, lovely or whatever. But I'll surprise you by being, like, kind of sharp and, like, a little mean or, like, allude to sex real quick or something like that, and you're like, oh, and
getting frisky
yeah, did you know her tent story? Yeah, and where you're like, oh, okay. And so she has a little bit of like shock even that she brings in her like gentle way.
Caroline, did you see the clip about the style in New York City?
Yeah. The pashmina,
yes, which I love it so much, because it is this way of your like micro concessions thing of like her. I like how much she talks to you about her process and also talks about being styled so that everybody knows where she's coming from.
When I flipped it up here, it kept falling down, so I called Jane Tucker and I said, Jane, I think my pashmina needs a little snaps up here to keep it in place. She said, it doesn't need snaps. What you need is an attitude. When you toss, flip it over your shoulder, you stare at your shoulders. It wouldn't dare come off.
It was a way of sort of saying to women in the audience, do not be threatened by me. I am well put together, but I pay for this, and I also make mistakes.
Yeah, and I also don't know what I'm doing if I'm in New York.
But also, yes, defining a common enemy. But also that she can be, like, catchphrase comedy some of the time, you know?
Yeah.
Like, she really does sort of... It's also neat to watch somebody be entirely a comedy professional, but sort of working outside of our conventions. So she's doing things that are callbacks and stuff like that, but not informed by having your colleagues comment on it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like some of the times she is like catchphrasing it a little hard. And I think if she were a comedian, like somebody would have busted her balls about it.
Yeah.
But like, pastors aren't going to bust your balls about
it. But I do wonder, because there are some specials where she does allude to fellow speakers,
yeah,
fellow humorists
as
well.
She's part of a speaker association, so I think that's who she's talking
about. Oh, yeah, it's I think it's called the NSA, the Nashville Speakers Association, for real. So, yeah, you do wonder what peerdom looks like in a space like that, and what the feedback and just the kind of general macro sharpening of each other would be.
I get the vibe that she's like the gold standard. in her world.
I don't,
you know,
I don't know what's comparable. Yeah. I do want to play just to give
a
listener.
Yeah, we should play some. We haven't played any
like
of her.
Like a little, like just a little taste. And this is on the shorter side. This is a story that's like, what's great is the YouTube is so, like that. I guess they just started branding it super hard 8 or 9 years ago because it remains consistent to this day. It's a screenshot, you know, a little headshot of her for the thumbnail and in a Cooper font that you would see in Pin 15
in yellow,
or Hot
Cooper
American
Cooper.
Summer. Uh-huh. It's like, never make a man do the groceries or whatever the case may be. So this is like, five-year-olds are gross or something.
That I was Miss Congeniality in the Miss America pageant. I can still do this too.
1 year.
By the way, I realized that when you came in and you got your sheet of paper that told you that there would be someone here who was in the Miss America pageant, that some of you might be expecting a slightly younger, slightly better looking woman. But I have watched you come in and I must be honest with you. I was expecting some younger, better-looking men.
Oh, my God.
And in case Most some of you nice. Think that I am traveling around the country as a professional speaker with my crown still in my purse, let me tell you right now where this all fits into my life at this point. Not long ago, I was asked to go down to Port St. Joe, Florida. I thought to speak to high school students. I was standing with the school superintendent in the gymatorium when he said we got so excited about having a speaker from out of the county that we decided to bring in all of our students, kindergarten through grade 12. I had a hot flash. Or, as we say in the South, a little personal summer.
Oh my God.
Personal summer.
Oh, man.
I said, wait a minute, you've just changed all the rules. Kindergarten people are five-year-old people. They're not even really people, not yet. What do you want me to talk to five-year-olds about? Goal setting? The internet? Really, the best thing I would say to a five-year-old is, I will give you some money if you will go away. They make me nervous, and if I'm ever around a whole class of them, when they leave, I feel like I have ants all over my body. And he said, we knew this was going to be a challenge, so we told the high school students that you would talk to them about the steps to developing a sense of humor that will be an asset. I said, I can do that. That's what I do. He said, but with the five-year-olds, we decided to really push this Miss North Carolina angle. He said, we have shown them dozens of pictures of young women wearing long gowns, holding roses, crowns on their head. And in case any of you are taking notes, and I see so many of you have ripped out pencils so far, if shown enough pictures, five-year-olds can be made to understand the words Miss North Carolina. Unfortunately, there's no picture for the word former. And they came in looking for her. And they run in little lumps and clumps at that age. Have you ever noticed it? One whole kindergarten class was holding on to the same long piece of rope, moving along like a giant centipede. The teacher could take them anywhere she wanted to take them. And if she felt like it, she could pop that rope and they'd go up and down. And she took the whole kindergarten class up into the stands. And they got up there, and before the teacher knew what was happening, one of the little five-year-olds, as we would say in North Carolina, broke loose.
what?
She got down on the floor and was looking up at me. And she said, "Where is Miss North Carolina?" Well, if there's one thing we all know, it is the importance of honesty anytime, but especially if you're dealing with young children. I looked her straight back in the face. I said, "She's sick."
Oh my gosh.
She looked up at me and she said, "Are you her mother?"
And I said, "Gosh, no, her mother's dead."
That bitch. She's so great. She's doing all of that with like her perfect smile, you know, and like her big eyes. She's just great.
Well, and it does play into a natural comedian archetype of high status.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Or it's like, I'm the best. And then there's like this outside force as well. There's age and expectations, but it's like, I'm still the best. Children are disgusting.
Yeah.
All those things that are like generally tools in everyone else's toolbox.
Well, and also she packs observational comedy in the middle of the story. So where a comedian at a club would be like, "Have you seen a kindergarten recently? They're yeah. always tied together."
Yeah,
like
yeah.
she slides that right in there, and then that thing of like, it's like tantric comedy of it's so paced out that the minute she gets to something that is like a third of a punchline, you do want to laugh, and then she slows down for moral just before she gets to punchline of whole story.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, like when you have to be honest yeah. with children, and then bam.
It's pretty. I've really never seen anyone like her. There's not a Jeannie Robertson type, I don't think. You want to get to our final judgments?
I don't know. Do you have any more you want to say about her?
No, I just think she's great.
I think she's great, too.
Well, the way this part works, Guy, we give our final judgments. We give the person, the artist, whoever we're talking about, a thumbs up or a thumbs down. We give them a holy toast. We send that person all the way to heaven. We give them a holy roast. Unfortunately, they get a thumbs down and go to hell. Or if we're not sure, we can send them to purgatory. The space
between. I would not fit in the space between.
That space between. Have you seen me?
The ceilings are too low.
That's not bad. This is not a bad Jeannie Robertson impression, Caroline.
Thank you.
So we'll start with you.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you know what I'm going to say. Holy toast to Jeannie Robertson. I love her. Her skirt suits are iconic. They're great. I love them. She's always glittering. And
you do easily know which era you're watching.
Yes.
Yeah. In pantyhose. I even kind of love her little ethos, which is just like, find the humor in anything and no one can ruin your day for you. You decide that. I thought that was really sweet. And I think her jokes are good and she's a funny person and like perfectly suited for the kind of work she does. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. We turn to Guy.
Oh, I realize the other thing I do want to say about her is I usually deeply hate any comedy that is safe. Anytime I feel like somebody is just sort of like not challenging their audience, I'm like, what are you even doing?
Total pandering.
And I feel like she's not pandering. She is working within the like constraints of the culture of the people that she's talking to. And I appreciate it. I think she's challenging them on their tiny little terms about stuff like that. So, of course, I'm giving her a whole toast.
Yeah,
holy
even
holy
something
toast.
As inflammatory as, like, children are disgusting. Yes. It's like, kind of, ooh. Like, yeah. A wave a little bit there.
Yesterday, I spent hours and hours watching this woman on YouTube. And it was so funny to see in the different eras. She does have a Leslie Nielsen thing going on where she has looked 59 for like
a
20
long time.
Years.
Yes. Yeah.
Because of the haircut and because of her natural complexion and her features. enthusiastic holy toast from me. I was really smitten, and a lot of this stuff does fall into almost a maybe not the best example, like a Garrison Keillory, like this is pleasant kind of like patter with her audience. And there were fewer LOLs where it's like, oh my God, than I would maybe expect from other people. But the ones that are there do feel so genuine and loaded. And with someone like this, and again, working in this space, you have to applaud not only technique and talent and all the regular things, but navigating to be in a position where she is. It did make me think about all the things that are humbling now, where we still want monoculture in a lot of ways, and we want like A Star is Born is the best pick, or I guess Green Book is the best pick. But all the things we can agree on. We can agree on the Beatles. We can agree on Elvis or whatever. And we do have such natural snobbery towards like, oh, that girl's a YouTuber or something like that. And people like this who are doing such good work that aside from like a niche gimmicky podcast discussing them for an hour and a half, it's like, where's their glory in that cultural sense? It is humbling to know that these people exist everywhere and you can be as snobby as you want to be about it because they've like defined themselves in a certain niche or put themselves in a certain space, but they are very good. And Jeannie Robertson is very good.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. She's so lovely. Fuck anyone who like people who like want to watch this stuff to be ironically enjoying it. It's like you can go to a lot of those crappy people and ironically be like, ha ha ha, it's so stupid that they are Christian comics. But like, she's just good.
She's just good. she's just good.
And by the way, please look up her website. Please play around in that space. It's very incredible. Nice.
It
yeah.
was built in 1994.
I'm going to say like, yeah. There's some stuff going on.
Can I just take one moment to tell you guys about... Do any of you remember when there was a Christian The View that came on after 700 Club? It was...
Oh, I think I've seen some clips of that. I don't know if it's the same one, but I have seen like a women's daytime talk show that's
it was
Christian.
Hosted by Terry Musin, who is Pat Robertson's co-host on the 700 Club.
Okay.
And then they had the newsreader, who an African-American newsreader from the 700 Club, I believe. But then they had Their Joy Behar, who was a woman named Louise Duarte.
name?
And Louise Duarte was primarily an impressionist. And if you do want to watch older woman Christian comedy, I don't know if her website is still up, but she had an impressions reel that was astounding.
Oh my gosh.
And was like doing impressions that were so desperately out of date that it was the best. Like, it was really good. So please check it out.
Oh, okay. I'll check that out.
I wonder what that would sound like if Elizabeth Dole was here.
Yes.
Oh boy. We're not the final word, though. Go to @ChristianFunPod. You can vote on Jeannie Robertson yourself for this episode. So get out there and
Pokemon, go to the polls.
Thanks, Hill.
Thanks, Hill.
Thanks, Hill.
Hope you're chilling.
All right. Let's bring it down now. Uh oh. Give Guy a second to recover.
Remember that?
Oh boy. Who's gonna, what will be our next Pokemon Go as we enter into the 2020?
There's gonna be some whack thing someone's gonna say.
Is it gonna be Beto O'Rourke sending a dick pic on Insta stories on accident? Like, what will it be?
God.
Guy, we're here not to promote ourselves and plug our own projects, but to lift them up to the Lord. And we do that with reverence in our hearts and honor. And we start with Caroline when we do that.
You can lift up my projects, as I call them, aka my tweets about shitting or whatever, Caroline's Farts. That's what I'm working on.
Okay.
And this week I'd like to lift up a show that I've been watching and really loving called Game of Thrones. And Kevin is kind of a new niche thing that I don't know you heard about. But anyway, I just got to season 3 and wow, this show's great. I really love it. So that's what I like to lift up.
It's like you're Brendan Fraser in Blast from the Past coming up from a bunker. And I'm your Alicia Silverstone yeah, we have
That
the
movie
TV
is great.
Now.
Yeah. Hot Dr. Pepper.
Oh my gosh.
Your turn.
I am @GuyBranum across social media. And this week, I would like to suggest that people watch the other two on Comedy Central because it's
why is that?
It's very funny, but also I work for it now.
Yes. Also, you work for it now. Hey,
I don't have access to Comedy Central, so I watch all the Instagram clips like religiously because I like love the show and I can't watch it.
It's a really funny show. It is rare and nice to get to watch a funny show these days.
Yeah, it's so good.
It is strange, and you work on this show, so I can say this, but I feel like that show would be such a larger conversation if not for Comedy Central's strange streaming deals.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, do you want to explain the premise real quick? Because I think it's a good one.
Oh, the premise is it's about the older brother and sister of a kid who became a singer who became YouTube famous like Bieber. So it's basically what happens when your 14-year-old brother becomes the most famous person in the world.
Yes.
Yeah, which a lot of Drew Tarver's actual DNA of that show in real life was incorporated into that. Yeah. Oh, boy. And, of course, listen to Pop Rocket. That's one of the podcasts I listen to every week.
Thank you.
I love your insights on that show. And I do talk back to it. And my life as a goddess. Yes. I'm pronouncing that right, right?
Thank you for promoting me better than I did myself. I really appreciate it.
I'll be your hype, man.
Absolutely.
Yes. You can lift me up at Kevin T. Porter. I will lift up the music of Nicholas Britell, which is he's the composer for If Beale Street Could Talk, and for Succession, and for one other movie I'm forgetting right now, but he's done quite a few where he's pretty extraordinary. I've been jamming on Beale Street the last couple weeks. Very good writing music.
I know.
If you're looking for something that sounds like God himself wrote the score. Whoa. Lift us up at Christian Fun Pod everywhere. Go to patreon.com/goodchristianfun for more good Christian fun. Leave us a review. We donate $1 to charity on iTunes/Apple Podcasts. Every review that you leave, we donate $1 to Charity Water.
That's right.
Right?
Right. Charity Water. They're helping people in need get to good, clean water that they can drink.
Wonderful. Guy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I love your mind and I love your heart and I love the way you expressed it today on the show.
I love your mind and heart, Kevin.
Aww. What about me?
We're just getting to know each
other. Okay, fair enough. I understand. Yeah, that's right.
We'll do a check-in in like 2 years to see how we're going. And there's nothing left to say except for, and all of Pond's people said,
Amen.
Let's go out with a song. You know what? We'll say it's a Christian song for the time being. It's Visions of Gideon by Sufjan Stevens, which is from a scene that they recently parodied on The Other Two.
Oh, yeah.
From the end of Call Me By Your Name. Yeah, we'll say he's Christian, right?
I don't know.
He's a Christian boy, kind of.
What does he say?
He's dodgy about it. He says pretty much what we say now.
Like, I don't know.
So he's like dodgy and annoying about it. All right, we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh, hi, y'all. It's me, Amy Grant. Next week on GCF, Kevin and Caroline are going to be listening to that Leslie Phillips album, The Turning. Leslie Phillips, The Turning. All right, that's it for today. Short and sweet. Amy's got to go. Amy, my own Grant, over and out.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.